end of the world is nigh. A cataclysm is coming, and Azeroth will never be the same again. This is a final voyage through the old world. And these are the many wonders you'll see.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Postcards from the Old World, our last great tour of Azeroth before it is changed forever in the increasingly imminent cataclysm. I'm Arezzo, and in the next few episodes we're going to be playing a little bit of musical chairs as far as the people presenting the programme are concerned. So you'll be hearing some familiar voices in unfamiliar roles, just as last time Crashing sat in for Gaffoni on the co-hosting. So today, helping me get this whole thing done and run through is going to be Beira. Welcome, Beira.
Thank you. Hello, everybody.
So today we're going to be looking at a block of zones in the middle of the Eastern Kingdoms. We're going to be starting in the Badlands, moving on to the Swamp of Sorrows, carrying on from there into the Blasted Lands, and then rounding up with probably quite a quick look at the slightly odd little zone that is Deadwind Pass. As usual, we'll be chipping in contributions that have been made by members of the AIE, Alia Iacta Est Guild, on the thread that we posted on our forums for this. So you'll be hearing various viewpoints on the zones that we're going to be in. As always, we're going to start with a little audio postcard. This time, just to change things up even more, another voice that you may be vaguely familiar with. We're going to be hearing these today from Gaffoni.
The parched, cracked earth and hostile wildlife of the Badlands make the region an inhospitable destination. Dragonkin lurk in the east, ogre tribes camp across the land, and elementals rumble among the rocks and canyons. But the area holds remnants of different times. The buried complex of Ulderman holds secrets from the earthen origins of the dwarves, and the promise of Titan treasures draws many an unwary traveller into its perilous depths.
So, from my point of view, the Badlands is a zone that the first time I leveled, I remember spending quite a bit of time in, and finding a few fun quests to do. And the note, as I've said in previous shows, the first couple of times that I leveled, I actually leveled Alliance side, so the quest experience is slightly different. But I remember, you know, finding kind of interesting little things among the nooks and crannies. It's one of those zones where, because of the landscape, you've got it's all like a, it feels like a great big crater really, but among the kind of the rocky outcroppings and stuff like that, you'll occasionally find a quest giver, or you'll find kind of odd little items or whatever, and so it's got a certain sense of, even though it feels very open and very desolate, it does have the ability to surprise you a little bit as you explore around it. And also, you know, it's got its hazards, and we'll talk about some of those later on. But, you know, it's definitely one of those zones where if you're a little bit unwary at level, you can end up in quite a lot of trouble, really. From the Horde point of view, one of the things that, you know, I've been waiting to talk about ever since we started this project, as far as the Badlands is concerned, is Kargath. Because I increasingly think that the 90% of the reason why anybody on the Horde side goes to the Badlands, and specifically to Kargath these days, is actually just to get the flight path. Because, as everybody probably is aware, there are a set of Horde flight paths in the north of the Eastern Kingdoms, and there are a couple in the south, Gromgol and Booty Bay, and Stonard in the Swamp of Sorrows, which we'll come to later. But without the Stonard and Kargath flight paths, there is no way, from a flightmaster, to fly from the north of the continent to the south. Obviously, there's the Zeppelin from between Orgrimmar and Gromgol, but, you know, if you're looking for a way to kind of just create that connection, you have absolutely no choice but to go to Cargath. And I do suspect, I could be wrong, but I do suspect that an awful lot of people's experience of the Badlands these days is running in from Lochmoden in the north, down to Cargath, grabbing the flight path, and then just flying out of there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, which...
I mean...
Go on.
I don't think I had any clue what was going on in that zone or its neighbors, Siren Gorge and Burning Steps.
Burning Steps, yeah.
I never, you know, the first set of character tunes I leveled on Alliance side, I never went there. I couldn't figure out how to get there. So I just kind of ignored it and did other things. And then when I got on the Horde side, I think it was with one tune I'd gone through... I was in the Swamp of Sorrows, I think, and then I couldn't figure out where else to go that would be reasonably at level. It's like, oh, I maybe should go and figure out what that's about.
Yeah, it is one of those zones, and I feel it's odd, you know. I feel like I've said this a lot during the course of this series. It's one of those zones that, if you're not careful, it's very easy to pass by. And there can't be that many zones that it's very easy to pass by, because otherwise nobody would ever do any leveling at all. But it feels to me like, you know, and again, maybe one of the things that definitely has been a theme as we've discussed various zones is that because the leveling experience now is so different than it was when the game first launched, that maybe once upon a time this was a zone that, you know, filled one of those really useful little niches to just cross you over a certain set of levels. And now, with, you know, heirloom items and the faster leveling rate and all of those kind of things, people just don't need to have that, you know, that kind of helping hand across some sort of barrier between, you know, middle levels and higher levels or whatever. So it could be that it's just another one of those zones that in the good old bad old days we all spent loads of time in, or a lot of people spent loads of time in, and now far fewer people do, just because it doesn't have any of the kind of the major attractions. That could be part of the case, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I think I used to find that I could get so much done in Tanaris at around the early 40s that I just kind of substituted that.
That's certainly could be the case, because it again, the other thing that the Badlands has got, I was going to say going against it, is that there are a number of other zones that cover, you know, that either cover exactly the same level range or overlap that level range.
And Stranglethorn.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as Crashing and I talked about last time, Stranglethorn is more than capable of carrying you through an awful lot of levels. To really, you know, relatively high parts of the kind of the mid-leveling range. But also, and again, from a Horde point of view, I mean, you know, you mentioned Tanaris, and from a Horde point of view, the Eastern Kingdoms and the middle of the Eastern Kingdoms in particular are a bit of a void, that because of that lack of connection, and because, you know, a lot of Horde characters, you know, whether you're Troll or Orc or Tauren, you know, you start out in Kalimdor. Kalimdor is the place, as far as I've always thought, is the place that the Horde is, you know, far more likely to level. And in fact, you know, I think I've mentioned previously, when I was doing Loremaster on Arezzo, when I actually came to really start that process, I had way more quests completed in Kalimdor than I had in the Eastern Kingdoms, but, you know, by a massive margin, because I'd done so much of my leveling in Kalimdor. And so the equivalent level to the Badlands for a Horde, as you say, it could be Tanaris, it could be, there's a whole bunch of other levels, other zones that it could be. And I think that might be it.
Yeah, in Kalimdor, each of the zones, the Horde quests lead straight into the neighboring zone. So you're sort of funneled right down through to the south of the continent, whereas in the Eastern Kingdoms, it's so divided. I mean, you have to go up to Hinterlands to get some quests that send you back down to Sunken Temple, or, you know, there's just this massive split, and there's no reason that you should just wander out of Arathi Highlands and somehow get down to the Badlands.
No, absolutely. There is actually, there is one that I'm aware of anyway, direct kind of signpost quest, one of those quests that kind of the breadcrumb trail that leads you to another zone, for the Horde, from Stonehead, from the Swamp of Sorrows. to go to the Badlands. But, you know, again, it's like, well, to do that, if you haven't already been to the Badlands, you basically have to get from Stonehood probably to Gromgol, Gromgol to Orgrimmar maybe, or Undercity, and then you've got to fly and then run down and do that run that I was talking about from Lochmoden. It's a lot of trouble to go to just to open up another zone that you actually might not spend a lot of time in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the closest flight path to the north is Hammerfall.
Yeah, I mean, and so realistically, what you're going to end up doing is a massive run. And anybody, I suspect, is probably going to think there's got to be, when they really look at the way that, you know, the continent works, there's got to be somewhere else I could go to get a bunch of experience and level, you know, beyond where I am at the moment. I mean, if you were unwary and you went from Stonehood, you could run directly south and find yourself in the Blasted Lands. And admittedly, you probably wouldn't get a lot done there. But, you know, there are places that you could absolutely go to that would give you, you know, as much, if not more, XP for leveling without doing that, without spending an awful lot of time or wasting an awful lot of time doing the big run round. So I think there are lots of reasons why, even if you're directed to Kargath and to quest in the Badlands, you might not do it. And it is a pity because there are some kind of fun things in there, and you know, it's got its challenges, which we will absolutely come on to talk about. I know. But yeah, I think the other thing. Oh, and of course, there is one other reason that I can think of why people might go there, which is for holiday achievements.
Right.
Which, you know, there's a Midsummer Flame there, and yeah, all the kind of the holiday stuff tends to hit Kargath like it does everywhere else. So I suppose that is another reason that now I'm thinking about it could potentially have people go there. But again, it's one of those things where, you know what it's like when you just want to do all the things for a holiday achievement. You just go to the place, you do the thing you've got to do, you go away again. You're not going to explore the Badlands just because you've gone there to do a Midsummer Flame.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think that as the desert sort of more barren zones go, it's not one of the most pleasant looking ones. I mean, if you look at it as a place that where there are kind of a lot of people who are lost and they're not connected to each other, they're sort of refugees from one catastrophe or another, it makes sense. But just as a traveler going in there, it's very forbidding. It's very bleak. There's no feel, you know, there are flight paths, there's what's left of Kargath, but there's no city, town, or anything available there. And it's a little off-putting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. It's probably worth kind of starting to chip in some of the comments that people made on the forum thread about the Badlands at this point, just to add some other viewpoints than our relatively unimpressed ones. Although that said, I'm going to have to struggle a little bit to find too much to say in the positive terms about the Badlands. Salvatore said, apart from Ulderman, my only fun memory of this zone is farming the drakes away off in the northeastern part of the zone when they were still elites. I remember them being worth ridiculous amounts of XP, and the whelps had a chance to drop a whelpling pet, keeping my interest a bit longer. It is a little bit sad, I have to say, that in order to keep someone's interest in a zone, you have to throw in the vague, tiny possibility of a pet dropping from a mob that you're grinding there.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah, half the people in Swamp of Sorrows are actually after a green whelpling.
Yep, absolutely. And O2L said, I know this seems like yet another desert type zone, but I really enjoyed how I rolled into this. My first encounter was when I was a low level ally questing in Lochmoden. The pass leading down into the area was too inviting to ignore, so I walked down the gentle slope to explore. I know this feeling really well. Before I even saw a mob, there was a horde character with a name in red and a skull for a level indicator riding a mount. I don't even remember what race that character was. All I know is I turned around and ran like hell. This was my first encounter with a member of the opposing faction, and I wasn't really clear on what they could do to me. Turns out I was safe. Turns out I was safe since it was a PvE server and I wasn't flagged. Once I was appropriate level, I ventured back into the Badlands with more confidence. I enjoyed how the quests came from little campsites instead of larger hubs. As an Alliance character, it made me feel more of a frontier. Made it feel more of a frontier zone. I didn't have a base, and the quests rolled slowly rolled the area out to me. And that's true, actually. He kind of he does make the point, I think, that especially if you're Alliance, but even to a certain extent if you're Horde, there is a quest hub at Kargath, but otherwise you do tend, it's like I said when I first started talking, you know, you can round the corner of those rocks and find that dwarven prospector, and you know, who sends you off to kill elementals and get stuff and things like that, and it is definitely one of those zones where exploring, taking the time to explore, does, you know, provide a return in experience, not XP terms, but in terms of the experience that you have in exploring. There's one comment from the thread that I know gives a good lead into something I know you wanted to talk about. So Lachesis says, I almost always stop here for a level or two any time I get a character to 39 or 40 or so. I can remember farming Fireleaf here back in Classic and running into the patrolling ogres who I think were elite at the time, I'm not sure. And then I can't, unfortunately, this being a family-friendly podcast, do complete justice to the long string of characters that he's used in place of the expletives that he would obviously prefer to use. But I will do my level best to use appropriate British curse terms. I remember quite clearly my first experience with the eastern edge of the zone. It went something like, "Oh crikey, dragons! Damn, damn, crikey! Crikey! Run, 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 run!" Which, you know, he clearly meant to say something rather stronger than crikey by means of his character strings. But you know, that's absolutely one of those things that the zone is well known for, is that out of nowhere you can suddenly find yourself dealing with something way out of your league. And like I said, I know that was something that was one of your key points about the Badlands.
Well, I mean, I feel like most of the quests are either go get these reagents, go get this, fetch that, go to the AH, get me this part, or they lead you in some way, shape, or form to Blackrock Spire. But there is this piece of lore, and it is the thing that does link Badlands to the north, where maybe you've just come from, and that is that there are these dragons that have been sort of imprisoned because they were part of Deathwing's dragonflight. But you know, when the orcs were in league and trying to force the Red Dragonflight to aid them and Grim Batol, you know, here you've got these leftovers from that set of wars.
Yeah.
And yet there's not much made of that quest. It's kind of this, you know, it's a two-off called Broken Alliances. And, I mean, there are dragons in the zone. How cool is that? Most of the time, the dragons are kind of wafting around their world, dragons or whatever. They're sitting outside the caverns of time. Here are two dragons you're right off asked to go after. But yet, it just doesn't feel like it's that big a part of the questing in the area.
I know what you mean. It's a major quest in the area, but it does somehow feel, I'm not going to say bolted on in a bad way, but it does feel like it's got this, it's slightly disconnected from whatever else. It's like you say, most of the other quests in the zone are, you know, get me some reagents, go and kill some elementals, just, you know, backwards and forwards.
Take out the trash.
Exactly. And then you have got this quest, which certainly at level is essentially impossible because these things are, you know, massive elites. But the thing, yeah. But then there it is. You know, there is a lot of lore tied into all of these zones we're talking about today, actually. And this in particular, you know, there's a through line that goes all the way from, I think it's Warcraft 2, to what's coming up. Because as you say, you know, the dragons there and the story there is associated with what happened with Deathwing, and you know, look who's coming back in just a few weeks' time.
Exactly.
So there, you know, there is a reason, and you know, again, who knows what this zone will look like come the Cataclysm? But there is a reason, you know, that this zone does have something going for it if you're interested in it from a lore point of view. I do like that part of the Badlands. I like when you are at level or close to level, when you're in there and the quest requires you to go and find those kind of obelisks around that area. Mm-hmm. And there are the Whelplings all over the place. And, you know, Whelplings are a little bit... They're annoying wherever you find them in the game, frankly, because there's that whole, you know, oh, what exactly is their aggro radius? Are they suddenly going to flap in my direction in one of their weird, random, apparently random pathing, you know, movements? So you've got all of this going on. And at the same time, you know, you've got to find these obelisks. And there's also the great big dragons. And so it did make me feel that the first couple of times that I was in there and I was trying to do these quests, it did make me feel like I actually should be a little bit careful. I needed to be wary. I had to, you know, it's one of those zones where you, or that a part of the zone where you have to constantly keep flipping your camera around to see what's around with you, around you. And I like that. I think that's, you know, one of those, you don't often, like I said, you know, with people being kind of uber geared and all that kind of stuff these days, you don't often, as you level, find places that you really have to just tread really warily. And I do like that from that point of view.
Yeah, and there's, you had mentioned kind of having fun going after the rock elementals on that chain of quests, and I have to admit, it because of the where they placed a lot of those elementals, which is you kind of have to go scrabbling up the rock faces, yeah, and really into the margins of the zone, which you don't do in too many other places. You know, usually there's kind of this thick barrier between you and the end of the zone.
Yeah.
It just kind of, you know, reminded me of like going hiking in Joshua Tree National Forest or something like that. You know, you had this opportunity to kind of run around, try to find which of these, you know, rumbling rocks you needed to kill, and you can kind of explore,
yeah,
places that almost felt like they, you shouldn't be there, but clearly you should.
Yeah. No, I funnily enough, as you said that thing about scrambling around in the rocks, you know, I started grinning here because I remember that really well. And, you know, the kind of the challenges it can create with line of sight and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it did feel a little bit like, you know, finally a little bit off the beaten track. And I think that, you know, if nothing else, I think the Badlands has got a certain amount of that going for it. And the other kind of key thing in the zone, which, you know, we should kind of probably just mention in passing, is Alderman, which is there. And as, you know, as Gaffoni mentioned in the little intro piece, you know, is very, very, very closely tied to a much bigger part of the lore, which actually really kicks off in a major way in Northrend, which is obviously
all the
Titan stuff and the Earth and you know, everything to do with the dwarves. And so, in a lot of ways, this feels in many senses like a zone that you can kind of more or less bypass, except you need to pick up the flight path and et cetera, et cetera. From a lore point of view, from the story of Warcraft point of view, there's an awful lot going on here that, you know, that's kind of just either hidden to one side or kind of literally just under the surface.
Yeah, it reminds me of Desolace in the way. I mean, if you go in there sort of not looking into what's there in front of you, it's a lot of landscape, and you have these, you know, having to run here and there quests, but as you begin to learn about what's there, the ruins, you know, why are there demons there? I mean, there is a lot going on in the zone, even though there doesn't necessarily seem like a strong storyline.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of, there is, and it's true of many, many zones. There's an awful lot of, you know, history. Bear in mind, you know, I'm one of those people who came to Warcraft through World of Warcraft. I didn't play any of the previous games. What I know of the story and the lore from them is really only what I've picked up, you know, retrospectively, and mostly that, even only as it relates to stuff that's happening, you know, or has happened in the Warcraft part of the history. So, you know, it is worth exploring and digging into the no pun intended, because it's a big archaeological dig, but digging into the history of the zones from a lore point of view. And like I said earlier on, you know, I think all of these zones we're talking about today have really interesting connections backwards and forwards in several cases to the lore of the game. So I think that, you know, it's easy to overlook the Badlands and it's easy to dismiss it a little bit, exactly as I did, but it is worth digging into one of those zones.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And getting the flight path.
Yeah, let's not overlook the need to get the flight path at Kargath. So that, I think, is probably about as much as we really need to talk about. Not a huge amount from the guild to say about about the Badlands. Do check it out from a lore point of view if you're interested. But in the meantime, we are going to head south into the Swamp of Sorrows.
The baleful influence of the Temple of At-Al-Hakkar extends throughout the swamp in which it is found, creating a gloomy region of stagnant waterways and treacherous islands. Years passed, the swamp extended further south to the Dark Portal, and it housed a second Horde outpost to partner Stonard. But now Stonard stands alone in the heart of the Eastern Kingdoms, its flight point forming a crucial connection to more populous zones, and surrounded by Isera's green dragonflight, clans of strangely transformed Draenei, and the creeping denizens of the swamp.
I actually love the Swamp of Sorrows. I tend to like the more watery zones in World of Warcraft as it is. And this one, I don't enjoy the quests, the number of the quests so much, but I just love the zone. I love herbing in the zone. And I love that there is a sunken temple. I mean, it just gives it this sense of you're being an explorer in the middle of nowhere, and there are these just wonderful, mysterious runes, it's, you know, sitting around that you get to explore. Probably from the outside is more fun than the inside of the sunken temple, but
I can't imagine what you mean.
Yes, I've gotten lost one too many times in that particular instance. But the sense of being in a place that is sort of between here and there, but it's still, you know, unlike the Blasted Lands, it's still sort of living. It's got, it's corrupted, but it's still sort of hanging on and still sort of lush. So I just really enjoy the feeling of the zone. And I also find that it's an interesting place to understand a little bit more about what happened to the Draenei. You know, they're not really prominent in that many places, and yet here in this place you have these refugees from Draenor who finally meet up with people from the Exodar.
Yeah.
And the story behind the Lost Ones is quite moving, I think.
Yes, and one of those things that, again, you know, kind of, as with the other stuff we were talking about earlier, kind of really connects into, you know, a wider part of the overall story and echoes forward into, you know, clearly in this case, into the Burning Crusade expansions and Outland. I the first time I saw the Lost Ones, the very first time I was in the swamp, I thought they were kind of almost the creepiest NPCs that I think I'd really come across at that point. You know what I mean? They're kind of, they're apart from anything, they're quite hard to spot. The colour scheme in the swamp is very specific, and a lot of the things that live in it are very well tuned into that colour scheme. But they seem to skulk in the swamp lands, and they.
The way the lighting is tuned, I mean, their eyes glow, so it's like seeing these animals in the bushes.
Absolutely, but and also the kind of the way that they walk as well. They've got that kind of like kind of padding walk that looks ever so slight. It's like it's a bipedal walk, but it looks a little bit wrong. I always thought they were really creepy, and then I somehow was trying to work out much later on, you know, how exactly they connected into the Draenei, which you know makes for a kind of a great story, and the fact that, you know, there they are, these kind of like refugee characters, and they are literally lost ones,
and they are Draenei despite, you know, looking completely different from the Draenei as we know them in the Alliance.
Absolutely.
they are Draenei. They just are the Draenei who suffered the worst of the devastation of Draenor and then the continuing corruption from the presence of magics in the area.
I tend to think of them as the original Star Trek series Klingons to the later series and films version of the Klingons. It's like, you know, they're kind of there's the stuff that went in first, and then they decided to redo them a little bit. I know that's not the kind of the way it's supposed to work, but in my head that's kind of how I think about them. I'm generally, by the way, I'm with you on the swamp. I really love it. I think it's a great zone. Always have liked it. I mean, I've lose track of how much time I've spent looking for blindweed there when leveling herbalism and alchemy on a couple of characters over the years. But, you know, that used to be the place that I would go for blindweed. When I hit the blindweed level, we're straight off to the swamp, no question.
Oh, yeah, and you can level all the way to the cap in there and then not have to worry about leveling for the rest of the old world.
Yeah, absolutely. But then, you know, equally, it's one of those things where, again, the color scheme works against you. It's practically impossible to see the herbs. And as you are busily picking one, you can almost guarantee that a spider or a crocodile or a swamp walker or something is just going to come just looming up and you know, take a bite out of you. But I do love it, and I think it's a zone that has, I mean, absolutely, you know, as Gaffoni's intro said, there is literally this kind of baleful influence which is the temple that you can almost appreciably sense is affecting the zone. There's not that much that kind of literally ties into it, but you know, as you get closer to the Pool of Tears, that, you know, the dragonkin start to appear, and that sort of tips you to the fact that certainly back in the day when they were elite as well, tips you to the fact that something, you know, something quite major is going on here. That whole sense of foreboding that the kind of the tree canopy and the swampiness itself and all of that kind of stuff creates just makes for such an atmospheric zone.
I hated those wormkin when they were elite. You know, when you would enter at the sort of lower level of that zone, you'd be, you know, barely within a mile of these things and they'd sniff you out and you'd aggro them.
Yeah, and then they would one-shot you.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They were one of the things that just made me, and also, you know, there is actually a dragon flapping around there, you know, which some of the time, which is, it's like you said about the Badlands, and you know, we collectively have said about various zones before now, having dragons in a zone just somehow gives it a little bit of a, ooh, okay, this is interesting, you know, and not just the dragonkin, but an actual dragon flying around, you know, makes. Just there's that thing where you kind of you see it through the trees, and the first time you see it, you go, "Did I just see what I think I saw? Was that a dragon?" And then you start doing the, "Is it by itself? Are there more? What should I be doing here? What's going on?" So I think there's all that, and I love the fact that just as you run around the zone, it's so easy to suddenly find yourself running in a totally different direction than you thought you were. Because the little waterways, you run around a tree or you run around an island, and all of a sudden you kind of divert to go around a crocodile, and then it's like, oh, hang on, I seem to be going back the way I just came. Which is what you associate with being in an actual swamp would be like. You know, the idea is you get lost.
Yeah.
You fall deep into the swamp, and before you know it, you're not sure of the way out and all that kind of stuff. And I think something about that, the design and the build of that zone, creates an incredibly atmospheric experience, which I really, really appreciate about it.
Yeah. And, one of the things that I always, you know, again, I kind of found creepy, but also interesting is, you know, you've got this outpost at Stonard, and by and large, you've got people sort of sending you on missions, you know, get meat, carry messages, reasonably good, noble sorts of tasks, except then there's the sorceress who wants you to go poison the food of the lost ones. But on the other hand, you can also choose to help, you know, whether you're Horde or Alliance, help the Draenei at the harborage to sort of investigate what's going on with them and maybe help them find clues to a cure.
Yeah.
So there's this interesting tension.
Yes. I mean, it's one of those, that particular quest, which I just hit on one of my alts recently. It is one of those that where you think, hang on a minute, this makes me feel as uncomfortable as some of those Forsaken quests, you know, elsewhere in the game do, you know, where you go and poison her this, or you, I mean, it's back to, you know, killing poor Stanley the dog in Hillsbrad. It's that kind of thing where, you know, there is that thing that sometimes comes with playing Horde where you kind of go, am quite on the right side here? Is this actually a very good thing to be doing? And obviously we are. Totally we are. There's no question about it. But you know, the game does create a little bit of tension occasionally around some of the things that you're asked to do. And yeah, that's exactly, you're exactly right. That's definitely one of the places where that happens.
Yeah. I have to say there is one quest, you know, I don't like all the quests, you know, that sort of send you out to just kill a bunch of animals and come back. I mean, they're fine, but you know, I kind of, sometimes you get tired of those, but the only quest that actually irritates me is the escort quest. Probably every time we talk about a zone that has an escort quest, you think about it and it seems like the worst escort quest ever, but I think this one really is. Galen, this guy, is stuck in a cage in the middle of the Lost Ones in the Fallow Sanctuary, and he wants help getting out. And instead of following you, he walks straight through the entire village of Lost Ones, who are all going to aggro on him. It is the most annoying thing.
Yeah, I want to get away from this place, and I think rather than taking the most direct route, I mean, and let's face it, no escort quest ever takes the most direct route, but very few of them actually take the route into the thing that they're trying to get away from.
Yeah, let's not skirt the edges. Let's just walk straight through these characters, and if we get near one, he'll run at it and start fighting it.
Yeah, absolutely, and that, you know, the Fallow Sanctuary is thick with mobs. Yeah, it's not like he's going to run through and just aggro one and you deal with that one, and then he'll aggro another one. It's like you aggro one and essentially it's like chain pulling.
Well, and there's that one point about what I'd say a quarter or a third of the way into the escort where he rocks right by this huge cluster. There's several hunters and several casters, and some of the portal seekers can show up and summon in other ones.
Yeah.
You know, if you try to get him through there at level without having, you know, known about that spot and killed some of them off first, you're not going to make it.
No, and it is. I mean, but fair enough. You know, it is reasonable that every now and then a challenge will be an actual quest will be an actual challenge. Yeah, but
true.
But yeah, it there's something about the logic of that one that just escapes me every time.
Exactly.
Now, you know, the other point again about the swamp is that there is Stonehead there. It's one of those few zones that only has a Horde outpost. There is no Alliance outpost in the swamp.
And it has a portal, and
you know, you can get to it, and you can have a mage take you there straight away, which clearly when that was introduced was some small gesture towards that whole inaccessibility of the middle part of the Eastern Kingdoms to Horde characters, and again was at one point designed to be a bit of a shortcut to get people down to the Dark Portal,
and designed to be a way for mages to amuse themselves by porting people instead of to the actual cities they want to go to.
Yes, listeners, she does do that, and she has done it to me. But yeah,
I don't remember this.
I do. Believe me. But yeah, there is obviously that additional advantage to the Stonehead portal ability. But yeah, Stonehead is one of those interesting outposts which does feel very much like an outpost. It feels like it's kind of on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very big, it's not very well developed. It is very fortified. Like I said, I've recently been in the zone on one of my alts, And it just occurred to me, you know, as you come up to it, it's you know, it's got the high wooden fence with the spiky poles sticking out and the kind of the bunkers around the outside, and it does really feel like, you know, an outpost that is there to hold out and to provide that kind of vital line of communication for the Horde in that part of the Eastern Kingdoms, and that's a very effective kind of visual, I think, when you're in Stonehead or when you're approaching Stonehead, it really does feel like that, you know, you've come through the swamp, which is hard to get through, and it has that oppressive, threatening feeling to it. And then there's this little kind of oasis almost of safety and security ahead that, you know, that you kind of make a final mad dash for. And I think it's very effective. Really, again, plays into that feeling that this is a really atmospheric zone that has its own little story to it, almost, as far as, you know, the play experience. So, you know, before we kind of talk a bit more about what our thoughts, feelings, and likes and dislikes in the zone are any further, let's just have a quick look at some of the things that that members of the guild said. Salvatore, again, clearly a player after my own heart, whose opening line is heavenly for leveling herbalism. Yes, it certainly is. And a goldmine back in the days when rogues relied on Fade Leaf to make their vanish ability work. My fondest memory, however, is running pell-mell through the swamp, trailing a dozen or more aggroed mobs behind me, just to get to the shore, get myself molested by murlocs, a bracketed comment, now there's a raid team name for you, just to catch a rare fish for the Nat Pagel quest that was at one time required to train expert fishing. Ah, what we endure for the salty title. And you know, even as I read that the first time, I could picture, because I've done it myself so many times, you run through the swamp, and even if it's not specifically for that purpose, just it's so easy to suddenly find yourself with like 8 or 9 or 10 things chasing after yeah. you. And as fast as one of them drops off because you've gone out of its range, another one will just come in from the side yeah. and just join you. So you get, it's constant convoys in the Swamp of Sorrows, which could well be the name of a book. The constant convoy in the Swamp of Sorrows. That's really going to stick with me now. I shouldn't have said that. Delthan didn't have a huge amount to say about the swamp, but he did point out that the Swamp of Sorrows' only claim to fame seems to be its status as home to one of the most reviled dungeons in the game, Sunken Temple. We should talk about Sunken Temple a little bit by itself, but yeah, there is such a theme to people's comments about the Sunken Temple. It's kind of crazy. And then Otwell again said, as I leaf through my pieces of paper to find what he said, Swamp of Sorrows definitely deserves its initials SOS because I always got into trouble by attracting tons of aggro. There's a theme. There is a theme to this zone, listeners, and it is chain pulling convoys of mobs. If you've quested through Dustwallow Marsh and Stranglethorn Vale, you'll probably notice a lot of similarities here. But while all these areas have a low canopy of leaves, mobs hidden around every corner, and a generally ominous feeling, I really like the setting of the Swamp of Sorrows. It's creepy, slimy, and unkempt. And when I'm there, I can almost feel the ground squish beneath my feet. And I totally sympathise with that view. It's that atmospheric thing. And O2L says, this is clearly a swamp zone with all that comes with it. Crocs that slink around in the shallow, water-filled depressions, invisible to the wayward traveller that crosses over the root mound of an adjacent tree. This was back in the Walking Till You're 40 days when it was harder to get away from those cursed things. It's striking me that a lot of other people are writing about the swamp in terms of its feeling and its atmosphere. And I think I'm going to choose to have that be a vindication of my own view. But let's talk for a few minutes about the temple. Not necessarily the temple as an instance, because we're not talking really about instances in the series here. And all you can really say about it is that nobody likes it. And without giving spoilers away, go on.
Really a shame, because I feel like, you know, when you walk around, even, you know, before you actually get into the instance proper, when you're just sort of wandering around inside, waiting to sort of get down further, I like how it carries that feeling of the zone through. It's just then all of a sudden you're also stuck inside an Escher drawing.
That's a very good way of putting it. Yeah, I know. I mean, as an instance, the first time I did it, it was one of those, I don't know if everybody else had this experience when they kind of first leveled it in, when vanilla was all that there was, but there was something about Sunken Temple, like, you know, people in the guild would talk about, oh, Sunken Temple, in the, all these like hushed tones, and it, you know, it was a big challenging instance, and it had this kind of mystique about it, which is interesting because that mystique was quite a positive mystique, and it seems to have been replaced, or it somehow seems to have metamorphosized into, you know, a rather negative mystique, which is full of annoyance and irritation and out and out hatred in a lot of people's cases. But I think where it sits in the zone is one of the things that makes the zone really interesting. You know, I mean, yeah. I think most people are familiar with the map of the Swamp of Sorrows, and it's that V on its side shape, and there's, you know, the kind of most of the wider part of that zone is taken up by the pool, which has the temple in the middle of it, and it's got the dragonkin around it, and it's slap bang in the middle of it. We talked when we were talking about Stranglethorn, about how it's one of those zones where it feels like nature's won. You know, there's all those ruins that the jungle is just reclaiming, basically. This is another one of those. It's like, you know, this temple, which is, you know, if you think about the actual size of the construction, is enormous, but has just sunk into the swamp. And although it's all still there inside, and once you get into the instance, it's, you know, it's not affected by that particularly. As it sits in the zone, it's another one where it feels like, yeah, actually, nature's won. You know, you build this great big thing. Where does it end up? Bottom of a lake. And so there's a lot, I think, about that. You know, it's unlike the approach to any other instance. And it has a presence in the zone that I think is unlike most other instances, because it does just totally, even though you can't see it, it's like, you know, it's there, you know, it's slap bang in the middle of that great big pool. So I'm going to keep using the word atmospheric, adds to the atmospheric nature of the zone. And that's kind of my key thing about this zone, I think, is the atmosphere, and how you get a feeling in it that I think is more visceral. Almost sounds like, you know, kind of hackneyed cliche kind of word, but almost more visceral than practically any other zone that I can think of.
Yeah, I agree.
So there's the swamp for you. My key word is atmospheric, and I'm now going to stop using that word for the rest of the show. The next thing that we're going to talk about is next zone we're going to talk about is the Blasted Lands. But there is a definite and direct lead in to the Blasted Lands from the swamp, which was mentioned by Lachesis, and it's one of those odd little kind of really flavorful, I won't use the A word again, things in the game, which is the I'll read what he said. The swamp has always been a pit stop to me between Karazhan and the Dark Portal. It's a nice enough zone with interesting quests, but it's always been sort of out of the way and foreboding, and I usually level past it before I think about going there. Interestingly, that's what, you know, a lot of people said about the Badlands, and so every zone, I guess, has the potential to be like that for people. Anyway, he goes on. However, the fallen hero of the Horde at the border between Swamp of Sorrows and the Blasted Lands is an interesting NPC, and I usually stop in to say hello to him around level 40 or so. And I love the idea of him just stopping by to say hello to the fallen hero of the Horde. That's fantastic. But the fallen hero of the Horde is right on the border between Swamp of Sorrows and the Blasted Lands. Is an NPC that you can engage with who has a quest, who starts a major, major Blasted Lands quest chain, and who is, you know, is one of those odd little figures that you come across sometimes in the game that until you are of a level to get a quest from him, just seems to be this ghostly figure on the border of one zone to another, and, you know, who has this fantastic name, you know, the fallen hero of the Horde. So I think he's great, and I love the fact that he leads you. Or he connects those two zones. So that does, at this point, I think, lead us very easily and nicely into the third zone that we're going to look at today, which is the Blasted Lands.
The constant leakage of arcane power through the Dark Portal transformed the black morass around it into a blasted land. The sky here is constantly riven by lightning, the ground scarred by fire and magic, and demons roam freely throughout the region. The Alliance fortress at Nethergard watches over the portal and stands fast against the area's denizens, but it appears to do little more than hold a precarious balance, particularly against the Burning Legion forces lurking in the Tainted Scar to the west.
Now, the first thing I want to say about the Blasted Lands is it actually used to be part of the swamp. Anybody who has done the Opening of the Dark Portal instance in the Caverns of Time will know this, but anybody who hasn't might not. But basically, the Dark Portal, which is at the southernmost end of the Blasted Lands and obviously is the way to Outland, or the way to Azeroth from Outland, depending how you look at it, used to be in the swamp. If you do that quest in the Caverns of Time, that instance in the Caverns of Time, you will be dealing with events that happened around the time of the opening of the Dark Portal, but the landscape in which you do so is the Swamp of Sorrows. So, yeah, this is an area that has been massively affected by stuff that happened in the past, to create an environment that we now, you know, are all having to play through in the present. And that's, you know, I had literally no idea about that until I went to the Caverns of Time, and I was trying to work out, were there two dark portals? No, because this is the one that, and look, and the orcs come through it. Yeah, it must be the dark portal, but I'm in the swamp. And then I actually found myself, you know, having to go away and find out what the story was here and why the swamp had kind of receded and the Blasted Lands had appeared as the Blasted Lands. I think was brilliant and fascinating, because it's a significant, huge change to the landscape. In fact, historical change to the landscape, somewhat along the lines of what we've got about to hit us, you know, come the cataclysm.
Yeah, absolutely. And as such, I think, on the one hand, Blizzard did a fascinating job of transforming a zone so that it feels, I mean, you know what to expect in a way when you step through the portal, because it's as if part of Draenor has erupted forth into Azeroth. It's that same scorched earth, bleak, tainted kind of landscape.
It's very like Hellfire Peninsula in feel. I mean, the exact details are different, but you're right. There is this kind of weird sense of it's very like somewhere else that you might see one day.
I think the thing that I like most about the Blasted Lands, it is the one thing, is the portal itself. I remember the first time standing in front of it when I was ready to cross through and just kind of being awestruck by this architecture and this mysterious entrance. Other than that, I really don't have all that much good to say about the Blasted Lands. I avoided it like the plague on most of my characters. I don't remember doing any questing after I took an Alliance tune down there once and decided I didn't like it. I didn't even know about the Blood Elf mages, mages, I guess they are, standing around offering quests. You know, I didn't even explore it that much. I found the zone so bleak, and, you know, by the time you've discovered the dark portal is there, kind of the thing you want to do is get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. I'm now suddenly regretting my commitment not to use a particular word again earlier.
Oh no!
Because I don't hate the Blasted Lands. I don't love the Blasted Lands. I don't really think much about the Blasted Lands, except insofar as it's, you know, it's where the dark portal is. But I do think, you know, again, going back to the days before Burning Crusade was even, you know, on the horizon, and this was a zone in vanilla WoW it didn't have half of the stuff that's now kind of around the portal there anyway. It was just like the portal just kind of sat there at the, you know, the kind of the extremity of this zone. I remember Gaffoni telling me when I leveled my first character, you know, you should go to the Blasted Lands and just keep going south, you know, and until you get somewhere, you'll know where I'm talking about when you get there. And so I was like, okay, what on earth is this all about then? And I went in there and, you know, probably got killed a few times. And then suddenly there, kind of, you know, way in the distance was the dark portal, which was practically at that point, I remember, being impossible to get near because, you know, the mobs were higher level than me and they were tough and there were a lot of them. And so it did have this sense of being of this kind of weird, mysterious, you know, not quite sure what it's there for. And there was, and again, because I wasn't familiar with the history at that point, there literally appeared to be no reason for it to be there. Which just added to this kind of weird mystery, mystique about it, about the whole zone. I don't have any particularly strong feelings one way or the other about the Blasted Lands, but I do like the atmosphere, of the, you know, the way the sky has constantly got the lightning kind of, you know, riding through it, and the fact that the sky is the colors that it is, and it, like you say, it's like a little bit of a projection of a slightly different world into the world around it.
Well, I think in so many ways, given its place in the lore, it is exactly what it should be. I think a lot of my distaste for it partly it's the atmosphere, but, you know, because it's depressing, which obviously it would be. But going at it from an Alliance standpoint, which was my first introduction to it, there's a fairly significant building there, this fortress.
Yeah.
It's big. It looks like it should be a major quest hub. And there are only about 5 Alliance-only quests in the zone, and they're all about other things. There's the Necrom's Medallion, which just sends you back to the Hinterlands. There's one quest sort of, oh, we're fighting the orcs, we shouldn't be fighting them, we should work together, and then go through the portal. I mean, there's not anything that really keeps you there. And you know, a lot of the neutral quests are, again, these sort of stray people here and there. I mean, who in a way are kind of cool, because what are they doing there? They're making a very strange existence out of getting bits and pieces and, you know, either trying to find Draenethys shards, yeah, or making concoctions of various frightening sorts. But there's not... there's no real cohesiveness in the quests. It just doesn't feel like there's anything much to do except for the Fallen Hero Chain,
yeah,
which I didn't actually discover until, you know, really I was doing Lore Master and I stumbled across it. I'm not sure why I never saw that figure before. Mm.
Well, and it, let's face it, that quest chain is a gift to people doing Lore Master, because there are so many quests in it.
Oh, yes.
So... yeah, from that point of view, I can see why that would be a reason why you and probably a lot of other people stumble across it as well. A couple of people commented, and actually I've seen comment elsewhere about the Blasted Lands being a very, very good zone for kind of grinding, and, you know, kind of leveling that way, because there are those quests, like
and
you said,
a lot of them are repeatable.
Yeah, so there's like there are those kind of elves that will give you, you know, go and get me some of these and go and get me some of those kind of quests. And you can probably grind out a good couple of levels just grinding stuff around there. But the other thing I kind of really like about the zone is that it's like every now and then you're just running along the ground and you suddenly realize you're running across some weird kind of mystical symbol that's just there on the ground, and that, you know, in any common sense view, you shouldn't really run across the middle of, because heaven alone knows what might happen to you. You know, there's things like that. There's things like the sky and the kind of the lightning and all of those sort of things that just everything about it just feels like it's wrong. It's a wrong place.
It's forbidding.
Yes, absolutely. It sits ill that you should be there. And I know what you mean about Nethergard Keep. It really does look like it's going to be, oh, fantastic, there's going to be loads to do here. And there's next to nothing. There's barely, you know, there's a handful of vendors. And
you'd expect that, you know, of all places, this outpost where they're trying to keep watch over the portal and keep any, you know, of the Burning Legion that through back, you know, and deal with the demons, yeah, that are running around, that they'd have you going out after a bunch of them, that it would be a matter of, okay, kill 10 of those, and but not that that's not the way it works.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The kind of it's there basically to keep watch over the portal, and presumably that, you know, that's what they spend all their time doing. But yeah, there really isn't that much of a sense that if the portal is that big a threat, how come that place isn't, you know, bigger, more well fortified, more populous? It's that is a little bit kind of weird. And obviously, kind of the other thing that you can see that it's there to do is kind of keep watch over the Nethergard Mine, which is kind of between the road and Nethergard, yeah, Keep. But again, all right, fine. If this is the only place that they can mine what they're mining there, I understand why it's there, but it seems like there should be more made of what's going on in that northern kind of end of the zone when you think about what's there at the southern end. And actually, when you think about what's there in the West, because there actually are Burning Legion demons in the zone.
And elite ones.
And elite ones at that, which are scary.
You do not want to go wandering in
totally
behind
not.
The dark portal.
No, totally not. And so if you think about all those things together, there is something about it that doesn't kind of quite add up in sort of storytelling mechanic sense of the game. But I think it does have, you know, other things going for it. We probably should actually let's look at what some of the guildies said, because a couple of them actually mentioned the fallen hero of the Horde quest chain. So it gives us an opportunity then to kind of move on from there into the quests and that chain in particular. Salvatore said, "I'm sure many will find fault with the rust-coloured Martian landscape, but I for one feel it..." Again, it's that alien thing. "But I for one find it rather vivid and atmospheric, especially with all that lightning ripping across the sky. The Blasted Lands are also home to one of my very favourite WoW secrets, and it's for Horde only." And I love it when we kind of have an opportunity to kind of point people at stuff that might be useful to them. "Just to the west of the Alliance Fortress of Nethergard Keep lie the Nethergard Mines," which we just mentioned. "If you've ever farmed reputation for the Netherdrake, you'll be familiar with the sprawling interior you'll find inside. Anyway, the mine is populated with dwarfs and other diggers, friendly to Alliance players but aggressive towards the Horde, and they happen to have the highest drop rate of mage weave cloth in the game. Most mobs inside the mine have about a 60% chance of dropping up to 3 pieces of the cloth. It's a fantastic place to farm for yourself or profit." So there's a hint, especially from postcards from the old world. If you want to make some money in the old world, go and kill a load of dwarves in Nethergard Mine. But don't tell them we sent you. Lagissus's opening line on this, it had me giggling a lot. "Blasted Lands, oh, you mean that place you teleport to at level 58 to go to Outland?" Which is harsh but possibly fair. Then he goes on to say, "No, there are actually quests there, and it's a good time for a few levels if you've got nothing better to do. I don't have many specific memories because I don't generally spend a lot of time there, but here's a few quick ones." And he capitalizes what he's given as the names of these quests. "I hasten to add, don't go looking these up on WoWhead. These are not the official names. The Cultists That Wouldn't Die and and Immortal Cultists 2, Revenge of the Cultists That Wouldn't Die." I hear they're making Cultists That Don't Die 3D for Cataclysm. And of course, that's kind of the key thing. That does actually lead into one of the details of the Fallen Hero of the Horde quests, which is the Cultists That Wouldn't Die. So we'll come to a bit more detail on that in a moment. Otoel is somebody who mentions the colour scheme again. As was previously mentioned, the first thing you notice is the colour. The colour palette. "The vivid orange and reds let me know right away that this wasn't going to be a happy, fun time zone. This meant business. The big thing here was the questing. Some zones are just a joy to ride through. They top everyone's list because of the beauty or landmarks. Blasted Lands, not so much." And then he goes on to talk about the fallen hero of the Horde chain, or which also has another name, people, which is referred to as the "You Are Racklich" demon quest chain. This seems like a good opportunity to talk about it. The fallen hero of the Horde on the border of the Swamp of Sorrows and the Blasted Lands gives a quest, or starts a quest chain, but gives the first quest, which leads you into a long chain, which is essentially about helping to deal with what's going on in the zone, and it just takes you around and it gives you a lot of opportunities to explore. It is very good for grinding because there's a lot that you've got to do in it. It connects to the wider story of the Fallen Hero, and there's all the stuff that kind of that goes with that. And the kind of the aim of the whole exercise is to find the name of a demon that will then allow other things to happen. But as a quest chain, as a feature of the zone, as an experience to have while leveling, I think it's a great one. I think it's just one of those that that feels like by the end of it you've really achieved something. You know, and we've talked about it on previous shows, there are some quest chains that just kind of fade out. You know, you get to a certain point, you think, right, what comes next? And there just isn't anything. And at the end of this one, it definitely feels like you've set out to do what you wanted to do, and you've achieved the goal of the chain. So it's very satisfying from that point of view. It's very useful from an experience questing point of view, and it is. I would go so far as to say the defining feature, apart from the Dark Portal, which is a geographical feature, but the defining feature of playing the Blasted Lands in the game.
Well, I guess you know one thing you can say about it is it's the Fallen Hero introduces you in a very stark way to the nature of the Burning Legion.
Actually, yeah.
You have this this orc who has taken, you know, wasn't sure if he was supposed to go in and investigate the zone or not. And as a result, he and his comrades get caught and horrifically tortured, and he kind of escapes with his soul intact but dies, but his comrades have their souls ripped out of them and used in the twisted way that the demon and his servants use them.
It's true. It's definitely from the point of view of painting a picture of the Burning Legion, it is very effective. And the fact that it does tie into, again, it's tying into the bigger story, which is this thing that in sometimes quite subtle ways all these zones we've been talking about today do quite effectively. I think the other thing that is kind of worth touching on in the zone is, or touching on a little bit more in the zone, is that whole space that now exists around the Dark Portal. Obviously, you know, there's the experience of the portal itself, but there is that that what is now that kind of little fortified space directly in front of it, you know, which again has been put in place to serve as a frontline defense against what might come through the portal, and which didn't used to be there. And so that gives you a bit of a sense that something has changed in the zone, you know, kind of as the kind of the threat from Outland kind of increased, and as the portal reopened, that the zone needed to change in order to reflect that, which again is a thing that not every zone in the game has changed to reflect the kind of the story things that have theoretically happened in it. So from the point of view of us examining the old world zones as they now are, before, you know, they become something else, this is one of those zones that in two different ways. One, historically it used to be something else. Two, it's actually had things added to it as the story of World of Warcraft, as opposed to the previous games, has progressed to reflect the things that are happening in that story. So it's quite an unusual zone in that sense, and that's, you know, one of those things that just because everything else is about to go into upheaval, it should be given, or the, I guess Blizzard should be given some credit for having been willing to change it to reflect its place in the story and its place in the world before now. But I'm probably rambling at this point, so I think we should probably wrap up. So we had not a huge amount to say about the Blasted Lands. It's an interesting zone. It's got some stuff going on in it, but it's mostly, let's face it, there primarily for people to go through on their way to the Dark Portal and to get to Outland now, which is kind of a bit of a pity. But one of the things that it does have, and it is it has got Netherguard. It does have an Alliance presence, and one of the things that you've been doing on the previous shows, obviously, is giving us a sense of these zones that we're exploring from the Alliance perspective. So since that's where we're up to at this point in today's show, this seems like a good time to take a quick look at the Alliance point of view on some of those zones that we've been looking at so far.
Long ago in the Black Morass, the sorcerer Medivh betrayed the Alliance. In opening the dark portal to Draenor, he blasted the land, destroying all but a small portion of the old swamp. The foul influence of the portal itself and the depredations of the Burning Legion that poured through it continue to corrupt both the Blasted Lands and the Swamp of Sorrows. At best, Khadgar, Medivh's former apprentice, has been able to keep watch over these two zones, but there has been no final end to the evil of the portal, and no cure for the Tainted Earth. After the first dark portal was destroyed, Khadgar had Edwin Van Cleef bring in his Stonemasons Guild to build a fortress to guard the Blasted Lands. He hoped that no one would reopen the rift between the two worlds. Nonetheless, Nezrul reconstructed the portal, and Nethergard Keep became the staging ground for the Alliance expedition to Outland. The troops stationed in the keep must stave off demons, ogres, and tainted wildlife, all the while keeping watch not only on the portal, but the Altar of Storms as well. The Blasted Earth offers little sustenance. A nearby mining operation at least provides metal ores that they can trade with Stormwind. The Kirin Tor mages and Alliance paladins at Nethergard Keep sorely need the provisions from the west, but caravans must travel through Duskwood, Deadwind Pass, and the Swamp of Sorrows to deliver them. As Watcher Biggs, the sole survivor of one such caravan, will tell you, the swamp teems with wildcats and crocodiles, and the so-called Lost Ones prey upon the unwary. Following the onslaught of the Burning Legion in the Second War, a group of Draenei crossed through the Dark Portal, seeking to escape the destruction of their world. Already twisted by the foul magics let loose upon Draenor, these exiles found no refuge in the Swamp of Sorrows. Trapped here after the destruction of the Dark Portal, overwhelmed with homesickness and driven mad by the lingering corruption, these Lost Ones forsook the light and devolved into grunting brutes who scratch out a meager existence at the Fallow Sanctuary. Among them, warlocks and portal seekers look desperately for Draenethist crystals, hoping that dark magic will enable them to open a rift back to Draenor. But not all of these broken exiles have fallen into darkness. At the harborage, the broken exile Magtur leads a small band of those who have maintained their Draenei identity, even though they look much different from their uncorrupted cousins. Some, like Kolaru, study local artifacts and try to understand more about the world they now live in. They've also received emissaries from the Exodar. Anchorite Avun studies the Lost Ones in hopes of finding a cure for their condition, and perhaps an antidote to the poison that the Blood Elf warlock Cersei keeps feeding to the Lost Ones' livestock. The Lost Ones do not thank these ambassadors for their troubles. They hate the denizens of the harborage, and Naboru the Cudgel hunts them mercilessly. Ally adventurers will likely be grateful that there is little to keep them here, and even less in the Blasted Lands. The few Alliance quests that lead to Nethergard Keep lead out of it just as quickly. However, if you wish to satisfy any curiosity you might have about the zone, and you're willing to put aside your distaste of working with the Horde, you can pick up some quests from the Ghost of an Orc Hero, or the Blood Mages who you'll find on the side of the road. But with the Dark Portal beckoning, I doubt you'll tarry here long. As you go, do not forget the light.
So, thank you for that, and thank you for giving us both a Horde and an Alliance perspective on the zones this time round. That kind of wraps things up for the Blasted Lands. We're going to move on to one more relatively small zone with a very big key feature in it, and actually a connection to what we've already been talking about, which we will discuss after we've heard a little bit again from Gafoni, to introduce us to Deadwind Pass.
The gorge linking Duskwood with the Swamp of Sorrows is a desolate area. Only carrion birds and ogres have made their home here, and life for even them is hard. There are few reasons for travellers to linger here, though the bravest of souls will explore south to the haunted ruins around Medivh's tower at Karazhan, and even into the tower itself, where strange games, dragons, and the horror of a night at the theatre await.
You know, for a zone that isn't really a zone where you just travel through it, Deadwind Pass is just fascinating, precisely because it is this passage where you need to, at lower levels, just get through it to get to other zones, but you know there's something else there. And before, you know, I was, when I started playing, I really wasn't a raider. I didn't do that many instances. And so I didn't know what was there. And there's just this sense about the place that if you take the wrong turn and go somewhere else instead of into the Swamp of Sorrows, very bad things are going to happen to you. And I like that. I would have liked that bit being in there even without one of the most amazing instances in the game also being nestled in Deadwind Pass. When the interesting thing about this particular zone that's not a zone is, of course, that this is the source from which the devastation in this Swamp of Sorrows and in Blasted Lands comes from, because Medivh is the one who betrayed the Alliance and helped to bring about the Dark Portal, and his abode is nestled within Deadwind Pass, which is a place where, you know, if you weren't aware of all the instances available and you were just traveling through trying to get from one place to another at low level, you know there's something terribly wrong going on in there, and you know there's a place where you shouldn't go, and you just get this wonderful sense of, I just need to get into this place and out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, the Deadwind Pass is, it's one of those places, and again, it's a place that changed, because at a point in time, at a certain point in time, Karazhan wasn't there, and then Karazhan was there, and before that, you know, and again, going back to sometimes if you were on the Alliance side, or if you were Horde side and needed to get through to the swamp, you know, Deadwind Pass is just is weird. Basically, there's a path through it, which, you know, at kind of 40-ish or so level when you're looking to the swamp as your next destination makes sense, where there are, if memory serves, the kind of the evil birds that are not too far off the path are like level 55 or something. And so, you know, really early on, you learned that Deadwind Pass was there basically and only to connect these two zones, and you'd run through it and there was nothing there else to do. And so you would never go off the path because the birds were unpleasant and vicious and many levels higher than you were. So there was no... there was no sense that there was a zone there to explore. It was a pass. It was a way to get from place A to place B. The fact that there actually is some stuff going on comes as a bit of a shock when you actually first go and explore, and you know, whether it's to go to Karazhan or for whatever reason you might want to explore the rest of the zone. Your expectation of it is actually different. Or rather, the expectation that you create of it based on your previous experience of it is significantly at odds with the fact that there is quite a bit of it, you know, south of the way the pass itself runs. So, yeah, it's interesting. I really like I like Deadwind Pass, but it is strange. Now, obviously, it's almost impossible to talk about Deadwind Pass without talking about Karazhan, because everyone knows that that's what's there. There are a few other points that people made about the pass in the thread. Salvatore said, apart from Karazhan, ta-da, lots of runecloth drops from the ogres in the south. Today's podcast is brought to you by hints about where to farm cloth.
And herbs,
yes. Lots of runecloth drops from the ogres in the south, and some interesting fishing way down deep in the gorge, which actually is a point I was going to make. One of the very few places in the world that you can fish lightning eel, which is necessary to make storm chops, which is a fantastic recipe, and I even just love the name of it, is in the water down at the bottom of the gorge in Deadwind Pass. So note for anybody who, see, hints for fishing as well. It's like, this is the hints everywhere show. Back to Salvatore. This zone is mostly utilised by NPC parents as a source of horrific stories to get their little NPC children to go to bed on time, which I love. You go to bed, otherwise you'll go to Deadwind Pass. It's dank, grey, and ugly. I'm not in the beta, but my guess is that after the Cataclysm, it will remain. dank grey and ugly. He could be right. Delphin points out that it's home to the best raid dungeon Blizzard ever put in the game. Which one would that be? I can't think. And that's about it, actually, he says. Everyone should at least go to see Karazhan. And if you're level 70 plus and haven't run it, you are missing out, even if later levels and gear trivialise it. Which is true. I didn't run Karazhan at level. Well, I was taken in as a sub by the Where's Northrend raid team when they'd already been running it for a while, and there were a couple of occasions when there was somebody short and they kind of dragged me along, and I just basically ran along behind the party and kind of, you know, attacked things. I was mostly feral in those days, and I just kind of like swiped things as I went along, but never really got the story of it. It wasn't until I leveled another character and made a point of going there at 70 that I actually got what it was all supposed to be about. So that's that. Who else said anything? Lachesis said, there's a lot of interesting architecture in the zone, which seems like an odd thing to note, actually. There's a lot of interesting architecture in the zone, and I really wish Blizzard had done more with it. As it stands, it's just a bump in the road separating the Alliance and the Horde as they quest in the zones adjacent. I don't really have any memories of this zone either, except for doing quests to become attuned for Karazhan, and then he goes on to talk about Karazhan. And as I occasionally do point out, there are a number of more detailed comments on the thread than we can take the time to read here, so please don't forget to check the thread out itself. Were you just hearing all the banging of the fireworks, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. Just in case anyone's wondering, there is not gunfire in the streets outside my house at the moment. It is, however, what we in Britain tend to refer to as bonfire night as we're recording this. So there are fireworks. That's what that is. Don't worry. Nothing too untoward is going on that I'm aware of anyway.
But you're recording this under your table.
Yeah, exactly. I just wondered in case people might think that Gaffoni had finally gone completely mad and taken a gun to me. So O2L says of Deadwind Pass makes me sad. Yes, I love Kara. It was the Ulduar of its day, but the pass is so awesome in its creepiness. I remember riding up out of Duskwood for the first time, exploring as usual. The feeling I got was, damn, I better turn around right now or I'm going to be defiled, then killed, then defiled again. And this was coming out of Duskwood. But sadly, the area doesn't live up to its image. There are some ogres and a small handful of quests to get the key to Kara, and that's it. So much potential. So there's one person who's not that interested or rather impressed by the zone. I think setting aside the ogres, who are a little bit of a...
odd.
What? Yeah, exactly. It's like,
yeah.
What? Why? Ogres? Why? I think, you know, the key thing, if... setting aside that we're not going to get into the ins and outs of Karazhan, the key thing really, and no pun intended with regard to the keys of Karazhan, but the key thing of the zone is I think that area around the tower,
yes,
which, you know, is creepy, is full of ghosts. There are those quests for the key chain, and there are, you know, there are quests that you can do just as being in the area, but you know, you go underground into what you expect will just be the cellars of these buildings, and suddenly you find entire cave complexes and mm-hmm. there's a lot of stuff going on there, and there's an awful lot above ground, even, you know, that whole kind of ruined town around the tower is a real landmark. I mean, the tower itself is the landmark, obviously, but the fact that all of that other stuff around it makes it again feel like with the temple in the swamp, it makes it feel like the instance, the raid, is properly a part of the zone, even though all of that stuff kind of sprang into existence when Karazhan was patched in. It feels like, you know, there is this town, or the ruins of this town, and at the heart of the town there is this tower, and so it feels like there's more going on there than, or there used to be more going on there than actually is now the case, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it's really fun. I sort of look at a certain subset of the instances in WoW as the haunted house instances, you know, like Sholomance and Stratholme and Shadowfang Keep. But that's the one for me where it feels like they just really had fun putting it together. It's like, here is the amusement park haunted house with all the fun features. it's just, you know, inside and out.
Yeah.
It just has that sort of feel to it.
Yeah, I agree. And as an instance, as a raid, I think its unpredictability is one of the things that really makes it. I do completely agree with that comment that, you know, it's the Old War of its day. Much as I enjoyed ultimately tangenting slightly the, you know, kind of the getting through Ice Crown Citadel, of the Wrath instances and raids, Old War is the one that just stands head and shoulders above all the others as far as I'm concerned. And likewise with Karazhan, once I finally properly experienced it, it's a fantastic experience. And it does, you know, you're right, it's kind of, it does feel like that sense of there's the haunted house. It's like if you imagine, like, you know, an episode of Scooby-Doo, there it's the big haunt, the big mansion on the hill over the overlooking the town, kind of thing, you know. Don't go near the mansion, or the kind of the vampire thing, don't go near the castle.
Right,
you know, you can see it, but you shouldn't go to it.
Yeah, it's in a kind of fun way. There's very much a sense of humor about a lot of it too.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, Deadwind Pass as a zone, bit odd, frankly. that should be on its tombstone. Deadwind Pass, bit odd. there are ogres. There are those evil, vicious birds. There are the ghosts in the town around the Tower of Karazhan. There is Karazhan itself, of course. There are fish that can be turned into storm chops. And yeah, that's kind of what Deadwind Pass is. I think it serves an interesting purpose. I think the feeling of the stuff around the tower is cool and interesting, and it's a little bit unlike, there are other haunted, you know, ruins, like town ruins in the game, but I think it feels more gloomy and scary and a little bit off the beaten path than most of the others. So yeah, I always said right from the outset that I thought the Deadwind Pass discussion in this series would be a bit of a drive-by. But honestly, it feels really and truly, it feels like a bit of a drive-by zone.
Yeah, although I have to say, if you're going to plonk a level 70 instance in the middle of the old world, doing it like that, where it's set apart, or like Caverns of Time, makes more sense to me, even though I enjoy the areas surrounding, like, you know, as far as just the seamlessness of the landscape, Zul'aman and Zul'Gurub better. But I mean, it's like, okay, I'm entering a really high level instance in a fairly low level zone.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You know, but at least these, they're set back a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. So that, I think, kind of wraps things up for our epic four-zone program. That has been the Badlands, the Swamp of Sorrows, the Blasted Lands, and Deadwind Pass. Next time we will be doing another similar kind of show, of a block of zones that all fit closely together over in Kalimdor this time. We're going to be starting in Tanaris.
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 Okay, you say Tanaris. I'll say Tanaris. From there, that place, we'll be going into Un'Goro Crater, and then finally into Silithus, once upon a time, one of the scariest zones in the entire game. In the meantime, this time around, thank you, as always, to everybody who's contributed to the thread on the forum. And I, at this point, have to say I owe an apology to Zug. I may be wrong, but I think earlier on I misattributed one of his comments about the swamp to O2L. So apologies for that, Zug. I appreciate your contribution just as much as anybody else, I promise. So that's that. Thank you to those people. Thank you to you for stepping into a different role this time round.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And likewise. And thank you to Gaffoni for coming back from his sabbatical to give us the postcards at the start of the zones. So postcards from the old world will be back very, very soon with our next episode. In the meantime, from me, goodbye.
And we'll see you in Tanaris.